Hello, Karen. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Thank
How are
you.
you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being willing to spend a few minutes with us. We've got a bunch of listeners and people who are going to want to read this interview who are interested in their own problem of emotional eating and are interested in finding understanding better what has caused it, what's involved in it, and perhaps some other new ideas on what to do with it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what makes you an expert in this area and what you think you might be able to offer to our readers.
I'm an expert both professionally and personally. I have a master's in education and I have a master's in social work, and I have been what I consider an expert on the psychology of eating, which is the how and the why, not the what, for more than 30 years. Personally, I am a former chronic dieter and what I consider a world-class binge eater, certainly an emotional eater, and I have been a relatively normal eater since the 1980s. So I use my expertise that I learned educationally, and I use what has worked for me and readings in the field to help people stop emotional eating.
So it sounds like an interesting background with some personal and professional expertise on it. So do you have an institute, a clinic, or are you a private therapist? What is your how do you help people?
Well, I'm the author of four books on eating and weight. And I can certainly talk
Oh,
about them.
would you please name your books so that people can possibly check them out if they'd like to?
Sure. And these are the in the order that they're written. The Rules of Normal Eating is my first book, and that gives basic guidelines to connect to appetite, hunger, food preference, satisfaction, and fullness. My second book is the Food and Feelings Workbook, which deals specifically with emotional eating and excuse me, lays out what emotions are for, why do we have them, how can we use them, and how can we stop eating and connect with feelings so that we have a better life. My third book is What Every Therapist Needs to Know About Treating and Weight Issues, and it is for non-eating disorder therapists, general therapists who have clients with eating and weight problems. And my fourth book is Nice Girls Finish Fat, Put Yourself First and Change Your Eating Forever. And that is for all the women out there who take care of everybody else with their warm feelings and kindness and loving hearts, and then, as I describe it, take care of themselves through multiple trips to the refrigerator.
I got it. Okay, well, thank you. So then you've got a lot of material that we can take a look at. So let's just sort of start. I basically have called the problem emotional eating, and I've had a lot of therapists and other authors disagree and call it other things, compulsive eating or addiction, etc. I call it emotional eating because it seems that although there are obviously differences with different people, the main source of the problem, as I see it, is that people have negative feelings, anything from boredom to feeling unlovable to anxiety to anger, etc. And they use eating as a way to keep down, to get rid of, to cope with these negative feelings. So I call it emotional eating because they are compulsively driven to eat by their emotions. Do you see it that way, or if not, how do you see the issue of compulsive overeating?
I also call it emotional eating. I do differentiate between what I would call compulsive eating. You know, you're watching a, I don't know, a basketball game and your arm's in the chips and you just keep feeding yourself. I think that's when we sometimes just get out of touch with our appetite. So I would call that compulsive eating. And I think that can be a problem. However, emotional eating has the specific intent to avoid or lessen internal distress through food. I think as well that people have bad habits, that you can call it non-hunger eating. You could call it cued eating.
Mm-hmm.
A client was telling me she's been really enjoying food, eating healthfully, and then there were 5 cookies left over in the teacher's room, and she just ate them all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just mindless.
You don't think there was an emotional reason? You just think it just was almost like accidental, that it wasn't being driven by some emotion that she wasn't aware of?
I don't think at that particular moment that it was an emotional response. I think it just wasn't thinking, because for decades she had gone into that teacher's room and sort of hoovered all the food that's left on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that case, but I do believe that most of the unwanted or troubled eating that goes on is emotional eating, as you had described it.
How would you then describe, from your point of view, the basic source of the problem? How do you think the problem develops?
Well, I think it develops when we are first held by a nurturing person, and we are fed, and we feel contained and secure and comfortable and comforted. And that makes the connection between food and feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Mother's milk gets us drowsy. Carbohydrates, sugars, and fats do something similar. So there is a natural relaxation response from certain foods. So that we have a biological, most of us, not all of us, tendency to get that reaction from foods, you know, changes our brain chemistry.
Well, if it's something that everybody starts with, if the source of it is breast milk from a mother and how we respond initially, then how come only half the people, or perhaps even less than that, end up with an emotional eating problem? If the source of it is something that's common to everybody, then what else is there for people who ultimately develop the problem and those who don't? What distinguishes them?
Okay, that's a great question. I would speak to two fronts. One is that we are not all born with the same complement of neurotransmitters that are mood regulators. So some people have a more high-strung or sensitive temperament from their genetics and not having enough self-soothing neurotransmitters, they're more likely to go to food. And other people have a deficit of life skills for self-soothing or self-stimulation, whatever it is that food happens to do for those people. Unfortunately, many people have both.
Mm-hmm.
They have the genetic propensity to be unable to self-soothe, relax, or stimulate themselves, and they didn't learn the life skills, and that's what I call a double whammy. And those are the people for whom it is really hardest to overcome emotional eating.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do when you somebody calls you up? You're basically a private therapist working with individuals, and somebody calls you up and says, I find that I can't stop eating. I need help. Basically, what is your theory as to how, your theory and your approach, what is sort of unique about what you do to help people overcome the problem of emotional eating?
I work in several areas. One is... I'm very interested in their beliefs about food, eating, emotions. So we do a lot of identifying irrational beliefs and how do you change them to rational beliefs. In that sense, I do a lot of cognitive behavioral work.
Mm-hmm.
I help them build up life skills, how to say no, setting boundaries, problem solving, critical thinking skills, learning how to play and relax and let go, how to find passion and engage in life. Because when you can do these things effectively, you don't want to turn to food. Mm-hmm. You just don't think of it. So I work on the life skills front. And one last front that I work on is I find many of my clients have mixed unconscious feelings about becoming a normal eater. It may be part of their identity. It may be a way to their weight or an eating problem may be a way to say, look how I've suffered in life. They may have mixed feelings about how hard they want to work on this and just want it to be resolved quickly. So I work on the issues, the unconscious mixed feelings that they have. And the major one I find is rebelling. That people will say, well, I know what I should do. And then that little voice says to me, oh, eat the cookie. Nobody will tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, it's actually called the boomerang effect. When we are told to do things over and over, we do two things. We tune out the information, and then we also rebel against it. So I work a lot with clients on this whole idea of rebelling.
Yeah, I have found that a specific belief, people who feel powerless as one of their beliefs, I'm powerless, then have the belief the way to be controlled is to do what I want when I want, regardless of what I should or shouldn't do, or regardless of what anybody wants me to do, or regardless of even what's good for me. And as long as you have the belief that I feel powerless unless, so basically by eating what you want, when you want, regardless of what makes sense, it gives you a sense of power and being in control, which you don't experience most of the time. So I actually find that as what you're describing, that rebellion, the result of a specific belief.
Yes. And it's also very much the belief is the result of whatever happened to people in childhood. If their sense of self was annihilated because they had very controlling, domineering parents, mm-hmm. they're going to want that part that I'll sometimes call the wild child or just the self to come out. And they do battle between that and the shoulds and the shouldn'ts. And I try to help them develop a nurturing self, which only has one goal, and that is to do what is in the best interest of the person.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead. Keep going. I'm sorry.
I was just
going
to say, and by developing that, this whole ping pong between I should, I shouldn't, or rebelling, that whole ping pong match gets tossed out, and you're just focusing on what can I do now that is going to be best for myself.
Mm-hmm. And your main technique, you say, is cognitive behavioral therapy. That's your main approach in working with these people?
It's a big part of it. Another approach that I use is a trauma resolution that really has to do with people understanding, because there's such a high correlation between eating problems and trauma, helping them understand them when they have really intense feelings that they are generally from recall, not reality. And once they understand that, then the drive to eat lessens.
Mm-hmm.
So, would you like me to explain that a little
sure,
more?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure that I understand what you mean.
Okay. Let's say that your father was an alcoholic and came home, and you were scared the minute you heard him come in the house, and, just the sounds of this, his feet on the stairs frightened you, and then he walked in the room and somehow you got hurt. Well, if you're in a situation where perhaps you're waiting for someone and you're not knowing how they're going to react when you see them. Maybe you're just at a job interview and you hear that person coming up the stairs slowly, about to open the door to meet with you. You might have intense fear feelings, but it's not because of the person who's going to interview you. It's because you're stuck in recall.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're reacting to. So I help people identify what's stored in their amygdala and what's recall and what's reality. And once they're in reality, they do much better managing their
business. Yes, yeah. I see that as conditioning, and I have specific process to work on that. But I see that for me, the two major things which you've actually talked about are the same, which is beliefs and conditioning, and different situations. Emotions, particularly, I found like about 20 triggers that when those triggers come up, as I say, which are mainly negative feelings, when they come up, you've just been automatically conditioned, and unconsciously and automatically you just find yourself eating because that is the way you've conditioned yourself to deal with those negative feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a form of conditioning. I often say to clients, you know, we're all rats at heart.
That's right. Yes.
And We really are. Yeah. We respond to reward and punishment.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say, do you have any sense, do any follow-up, not necessarily formal research, but on some informal basis, do you have any sense of what the effectiveness is, the recovery rate?
I couldn't give you numbers, but I will say that it is a long process, and that the people who stick with it, which is, I don't know, many of my clients, do make changes in their eating and in their lives.
Do you follow up 6 months later to see, or do you have them call you, or do you have any, I don't mean necessarily on a formal basis, but just for your own satisfaction to know how it's going, or you just basically, when you're done, they seem to be in good shape, and you assume they'll call you back if they still need you, and if they don't, you assume all is well?
Yes, to the latter.
Yeah.
I don't do any formal or informal follow-up. I do, it's interesting, I run a Yahoo Food and Feelings message board. A good number of the people have been on it for a number of years. And so I can track their progress that way.
Uh-huh, okay.
That has been very interesting to see people who came on the board with no skills and no clue how to stop emotional eating. Now, having resolved a lot of their issues, now helping new members on the board.
One, that's great. You said a moment ago, you said if they stay with it, how long a process? I was talking to somebody the other day who said she has, like 4 90-minute sessions, and that seems to handle the psychological element. Then she has some nutritional and other kinds of work. How many sessions would you say for the average person? Again, I know everybody is very different and there's a wide range, but roughly, what would the range be of if they stayed as long as you thought they needed to really get over the problem so that it's gone, how long would you say your average client needs to stay?
Well, I don't think in terms of sessions, because I start off maybe with 2 or 3 weekly sessions, and understand that I do mostly telephone and Skype work all mm-hmm. over the world.
Yeah.
I have a small private practice here in Sarasota. So after that, people go to every 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So for me, it's not the number of sessions, but I would say from many months to a few years. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean they need to be working with me that whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But once they understand, I give people a treatment plan after the first session. And once they understand what the work is, some of it they do on their own. But for me, it certainly was not a quick process. It was a thorough process. It's mm-hmm. an organic process of changing.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody starts at the same place.
It's not a
so I think it takes quite a while for people to really be what they want to be, which is normal eaters or relatively normal eaters.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, where can people get some more information? Obviously, we've got, and I will put when I transcribe this, I will have the names of your four books. But what website can people go to get more information about you and what you have to offer?
The main website is www.eatingnormal.com.
Eatingnormal.com.
They can go to nicegirlsfinishfat.com. And I write eating blogs for GERS Books. If they go to their website, which is bulimia.com,
mm-hmm.
they can access my twice weekly blogs. And if they go to Yahoo and put in Food and Feelings message board, they can come up with my message board. And I also have a free Facebook app on emotional eating as it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they put in appetite, Facebook app, they should be able to get up upset.
We have a lot of ways to find you, Karen.
Yes, anyway.
Well, thank you so, so much. I so appreciate your time today. This is Karen. You've pronounced it Koenig.
Koenig is fine.
Yeah, Karen Koenig, thank you so much for your time. I'm sure that my readers and listeners will be fascinated with your particular approach, your particular way of thinking about the problem of emotional eating, and I'm sure that some of them will check out your books or possibly get in touch with you directly. Have a great day, and I look forward to talking to you at some point again soon.
Okay, thank you so much, Morty.
Bye-bye.